And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic taking you through what has become a beautiful morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, the sun is out. It's looking wonderful outside. I almost forgot what the sun looked like.
Yeah, we needed some of this. You know, it's already been difficult enough just, you know, changing life this much. And then when you have rain all day, every day, it doesn't help. So this is nice. You know, get out and do a walk or a run. Keep your distance from people, but, get out there and enjoy it. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. Like, you even talking about doing some yard work and looking forward to that later. Like, that's where we've come right now in our society. We're all looking forward to being able to do some yard work at our house.
It actually sounds okay. I'll pawn it off on my sons if I can, but if not, I probably could use the exercise anyway.
So, Joe, it's kind of an interesting point brought up that we were kind of looking ahead to for this segment. Nashville SC, and you and I were both there and kind of took in the environment. Munson, you were there too, for their opening home game against Atlanta United. And you're talking, almost 60,000 people there in the stands, the grounds around Nissan Stadium. It was just really an awesome environment to see people taking in the sights and the tailgating, everything that went along with it. And you felt like, okay, like, this is MLS in Nashville has officially arrived, and, they kicked it off in style. And it was going to be interesting to see, how the fan base was going to continue to respond, especially in the home games, as the season would have progressed. Now, obviously, the coronavirus has derailed that for the time being, the MLS season being put on pause, just like the NBA and the NHL. And Joe, I guess you can look at this a couple of different ways. Number one, I think it's really tough for Nashville SC because, you're starting to generate momentum. You've got an expansion franchise coming into the MLS, and you're trying to build this fan base really one game at a time and attract the casual fan in Nashville. And obviously it's impossible to do that when you're not playing and not hosting games. But I guess the other side of the equation is once we do get out of this, and I think people are going to be so sports starved and so hungry for sports that maybe people that wouldn't have gone to a soccer game before said, you know what, I'll try it. I'll go watch as many sports as I can. So kind of a really interesting situation Nashville SC is in right now during their inaugural, or what's supposed to be their inaugural season in MLS.
Yeah, it's obviously not ideal. It's a bad situation for them, and but for any sports franchise right now that would normally be having games and drawing fans to games and having games broadcast and all that stuff. But I think the second part of that is the way I kind of look at it. If you could do two realities and say, what's the attendance at their second, third, and fourth games the old way, and what it will be if it does return, if there are games, I would bet you that after this it will be bigger numbers, because like you said, people are starved for sports, and I feel like so many things that are taken for granted, not just sports but certainly sports, will be embraced and appreciated, and maybe people will go more out of their way to experience things like that after however long we are in this stage of life. So I think when it comes back, who knows when, but when it comes back, I think you'll see a bump because of that.
I think so too. And Nashville SC, they're doing some interesting things to kind of keep their fan base engaged. Esports have become, people have been playing FIFA, and they've been talking about that on Twitter. Yesterday they did this thing on Twitter where, you could tweet your name in and get the background of a jersey and your name on it as the background on your phone, and like hundreds upon hundreds of people responded to that. So, you're still staying engaged if you're Nashville SC and doing things that way. But obviously, being on the field and having, giving people a product to see on the field is the most important thing. And, both the encouraging and discouraging part of it is, if you're Nashville SC, that, on the field, you've lost both of the games that you've played, but you actually looked pretty good in both of those games so far. Like, the game against Atlanta, they were much more competitive and looked much better in that game than I thought they would. And they pretty much had the ball the whole time in Portland. So I think from an on-field standpoint, they were showing signs of being pretty good and showing signs, I think, of finding their way into the MLS and being really competitive right off the jump. And it's just kind of tough to see that derailed right now, because who knows when it does pick back up, if you can carry that forward and continue to build that way.
Well, we've talked about, you know, these football teams in this limbo right now, and how, you know, the teams that, you know, you look at Tennessee football, for example, you don't have a coaching change. You have the same OC. You have a, you know, senior quarterback coming back. Everybody has some turnover, but a team like that is in a better position to deal with this. You look at Vanderbilt, they've got a freshman coming in at quarterback who could use every possible rep he could get in the spring, and now isn't getting it. So does that, if you look at MLS, does a new team with guys who are still trying to build chemistry, does that hurt more when they come back versus some of these veteran teams that have been together longer,
yeah,
who can sort of just pick it right up when they get going? I don't know. I mean, I think that's probably something the Nashville SC people have thought about. I mean, it's just not ideal when you are trying to build, you know, that precision, especially in finishing your scoring opportunities, and then now everybody's just sort of drifting on their own for however long.
Well, Joe, I know we've only had 2 weeks of game sample size to really view this and react to it, but what have you made of the fan response in Nashville so far for what has been two games worth of an MLS season so far with Nashville SC?
Well, I think it's been tremendous. I can't say I was surprised. I do recall a couple months before the opener, you know, there was some talk of, you know, ticket sales maybe aren't as brisk as you know, they would have hoped. But, you know, I think that obviously that turned out to just be people wait till the last minute sometimes on things. I mean, the turnout that day, you know, to set the single game record for a soccer match in the state of Tennessee, considering what they beat, you know, when you're talking about, you know, Premier League teams and things like that here, and games that counted, you know, in international tournaments. I mean, to have the number one spot for this, I think that was a statement. And it was a great atmosphere outside and in the stadium. And of course, it's not ideal. The stadium that they're going to build is going to be the perfect place, you know, for that team week after week, and if everything goes as planned around the stadium. But still, they made Nissan Stadium rock, and so that was awfully impressive. We asked right after that, and we won't know for a long time, but okay, what's game two? Just like we talk about MLB opening day, packed stadium, and then 10,000 show up the next day. What does it look like week after week after that? I hope we get to find out at some point. I'll tell you that, Robbie.
Doesn't it seem like forever ago that we were talking about, like, the MLS stadium issues and everything going on over at the fairgrounds? Like, I know we've talked about, like, how, you know, this season we're going through right now with coronavirus and everything that's happened, really, in the grand scheme of things, hasn't been going on for that long. But I look back to like, that conversation we were having about the MLS stadium and the fairgrounds and all that, and that seems like it was 4 years ago. Like, it just seems so long ago with everything that's transpired since then, not only with the coronavirus, but, you know, they started playing right after that. It just seems like it was so long ago we were having that stadium discussion. And by the way, they've broken ground over there at the fairgrounds in terms of the demolition. So good news on that front.
Yeah, no, it does. It feels so long ago, and it's funny how things that mean so much and seem so, you know, like, overwhelming almost seem trivial now, you know.
Yeah.
When you think about, I mean, everyone was up in arms, and I mean, I think there was cause for people to be upset with how that went. But yeah, it's time has been mangled for me, and I think for a lot of people during this thing. I mean, I'm often finding myself asking my wife, "Yeah, what day is it again? Okay, and yeah, and how long have we been doing that? Okay, all right, you know, it's what time is it? I mean, it's a very strange time to be alive, Robbie.
It is. Well, I'm hopeful that when MLS does come back, that Nashville SC, they can continue to build this momentum. And I agree, Joe. I think maybe at the end of this, and you look at what's happened with coronavirus and everything going on right now, hopefully people at that point, they are so starved for sports that, you know, maybe you're a casual fan who wouldn't have thought about going to a soccer game before, the entertainment, and as we know, we saw it with hockey as well. Once you go and you experience it in person, I think you gain a new appreciation for it, and I think that's how you get your long-term fans locked in. So hopefully that can happen with Nashville SC as well, just like it did with the Predators. When we come back, the NFL and the general managers are at odds with each other in terms of when the draft this year should take place. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. That's a great song that Munson is bringing us in with there. Gotta love some good old Outkast.
Greatest hip-hop group of all time.
Whoa.
I agree. They're awesome.
Whoa.
Yes, greatest hip-hop group of all time. I will dispute any other argument you have on that.
There is smoke.
I'm with Munson on this one.
There's smoke coming out of the booth for that hot take.
Not even a hot take, Joe.
That's a little bit hot.
Grammy Award winnings in hip-hop and in the major categories, they are the best group of all time. Not a bad album from Outkast. I have not heard one bad album.
I love Outkast. They're great. Grammys, though. Don't throw
Grammys.
Beatles never won a Grammy.
I'm just throwing it out there. I mean, Tupac's never won a Grammy. I'm just throwing it out there.
Lots of people never won a Grammy.
But it's just, everybody loves Outkast. That just goes to show you. Everybody loves Outkast.
I love them, too. I just wouldn't put them ahead of Wu-Tang Clan, Public Enemy.
Wu-Tang has one classic album.
Yes.
And then solo albums. And then
there's some great solo albums. Yeah. Uh-oh. Is that Robbie? Robbie, is that?
Abby's going nuts. The trash people have showed up in my driveway, and she is very intent on defending my honor. So the trash people showed up, and she's basically 10 pounds. So as you can imagine, the defense that she is able to offer is just outstanding.
Yeah, it's good to have a vicious guard dog like that, man.
Yeah, it is. I mean, she was all about it. And then if it came down to like actually having to defend me against somebody, she'd be totally useless. She would just run off and leave me for myself. So that's what I'm dealing with. Well, Joe, we were talking earlier in the show about the NFL draft, and right now the general managers and Roger Goodell and the league are kind of at odds with each other. The draft scheduled to take place on April 23rd, and the general manager subcommittee has unanimously recommended to move that draft and push it back later, according to ESPN's Adam Schefter and Diana Russini. And basically, the general managers have cited that there's just not enough verified information about the players available in the draft. And specifically, what they're talking about is they don't have enough time to get player physicals. They don't have enough time for the players to undergo psychological testing that NFL teams like to administer. But I look at this, Joe, and I look at all the things that the NFL is able to do virtually and remotely from home. And you brought up a great point earlier that when you're talking about the draft and like the moves that are made on the day of the draft, they're all pretty much made on the phone anyway. I mean, they're basically general managers calling other general managers on the phone and making deals. So I think if the NFL can, and it sounds like they're going to be able to, I think the draft virtually and remotely should take place as scheduled on April 23rd.
Yeah, the problem with moving it is, like, how do you know, move it to when, and then how is that going to be different? Do you know that's going to be different? Right now, the draft is scheduled to, the first round, 4 weeks from today. When do you move it to? At what point are things going to open up that you can do the things that you normally did? I mean, everyone's in the same situation. Now, the one argument that some gyms have made is that, certain places are not in the same situation as other places in terms of being in their headquarters for the draft. And that's, in particular, you think of, New Jersey, places that are really hard hit right now by coronavirus, New Jersey, California, Seattle. I mean, so I guess that's a disadvantage to not, if other teams are able to be in their building for the draft and you're not, but really what is the, I mean, you need your electronics, you need to be able to call people and to gather and discuss things. And I just like, why is it so important to be at your headquarters? Unless if someone can tell me that answer, then I guess I'd look at it maybe a little differently. But to me, everyone's on this, it's the same playing field for everyone in terms of not being able to do your normal visits and physicals and everything. And if you don't know when that's happening, I think you just carry on with this and realize that maybe everyone is going to have a higher bust rate or not have as much information as they normally have. They still have an awful lot of information. They did the combine. They have all the game film.
Yeah, I agree. And look, I'm more concerned not as much with the general managers throughout this process, but I'm more concerned with like guys who didn't get to do their pro days, like Juwan Jennings, who's gone to the combine. He's run. His times aren't good. The game film tells you a different story for Juwan Jennings than his times at the combine tell you. So ultimately, I think at the end of the day, the game film is still going to have to be the most important thing you operate by if you're an NFL team or an NFL general manager when weighing how to make your decisions when it comes to the draft. But those are kind of the guys I feel for right now in terms of, you know, these guys that were relying on their pro days. They need every piece of information available to them to try to help their draft stock. And for a guy like Juwan Jennings, I know he's had some interview periods at the combine, but, you know, maybe the last image we have of Juwan Jennings in our head is going to be the time that he runs at the combine, and that certainly is not going to help him when it comes to the NFL draft.
Not that he was going to run a 4.3 at pro day, but yeah,
right,
I mean,
right.
It certainly would have been better. It always is for these guys at their pro days. But, yeah, look, the guys like that at least, I mean, like you said, he did the interviews. He, you know, some teams got a feel for him in person. A guy like Nigel Warrior, guy who really surprised me that he didn't get an invite to the combine. I mean, he didn't even have that opportunity. So he really needed his pro day and can use this time, you know, to get to know teams. And guys like that, certainly it's not great. I still think when it comes down to it, maybe there are some guys who at some of these pro days would have elevated themselves, would have been discovered. That happens, you know, especially – you know, a lot of times you'll see it like the SEC pro days, Big Ten pro days, you know, even like small college guys from nearby will get in and participate in their pro day too. Because, look, I mean, reps from most or every team are going to be at those big pro days. And so sometimes guys get discovered and will elevate themselves. But ultimately, you know, most people who should have a shot at the NFL are at least going to get an undrafted free agent opportunity and get to prove themselves in person. Now, we still don't know when that will happen either, but you know, I don't think anyone's going to totally fall through the cracks because of this situation. I mean, you know, there's still a pretty good feel out there for who's a player, who isn't, and again, there's video on every single guy.
Joe, we mentioned earlier in the show Marcus Mariota talking with KHON2 News in Hawaii about his decision to join the Las Vegas Raiders in free agency and had a couple priorities and basically was talking about one thing he was looking for when determining where to sign with another team was stability with the coaching staff, stability in the front office. I think certainly has found that for the time being with the Raiders, especially when it comes to the head coach. I mean, John Gruden with the contract he was given is going to be there for a long time, you would assume, with the Las Vegas Raiders. But it is interesting kind of the way in some of the comments that Mariota had to KHON2 in Hawaii about what his mindset was and kind of what he was looking at when weighing his options in free agency.
Yeah, some interesting comments there. He talked about stability. And the quote, you know, when it comes to this point in your career, you just want to be part of a team that believes in you. That can get taken out of the larger quote around it and say, okay. I still think of all the things he said that I guess, I don't know if I didn't like it, but I was just like, really? Was the, you know, the idea of like building an offense or a system around you to take advantage of your talents. And I'm paraphrasing him there, but I think any reference to that is, I think, kind of weak just in terms of one, you know, Mariota had a number of injuries as it was with his coaching staff's really, you could always making, I think, a concerted effort to use his running ability, but also not overuse it and not put him in too much harm's way. And he still had multiple injuries. Now, most of his injuries, funny enough, weren't in those situations. They were in the pocket. But still, this is a guy who was not going to last and will not last in this league playing like Lamar Jackson plays right now. I don't see how anybody could argue otherwise. So this idea of there should be this system built around him and he'd be so much better, I don't buy that. And his best pro season was in a straight-up power-running play-action offense in 2016 with Mike Mularkey and Terry Rubisky. You know, so that was the best football he's played, and it was really good football. So I think that's something that you heard from fans sometimes, and certainly people on the totally pro Mariota train who thought he could do no wrong, like the idea that you have to build a system around him. I think that's bunk.
I think so too. And look, there's also like this idea that Mariota is going to go somewhere else, going to go to Las Vegas, get a shot, and ultimately do to Derek Carr what Ryan Tannehill did to him here in Nashville. And maybe that's the case. I mean, I don't know that. Maybe he does go in with the Raiders and he becomes the long-term answer at quarterback there. Because remember, he's still very young. I mean, I think he's 25 years old. So he's still very young when it comes to being an NFL quarterback. But I just don't see it. Like, I think some of the things he struggled with here in Nashville with the Titans, and you mentioned there earlier, Joe, some of those simple throws, those give-me throws that you have in the NFL that he just misses on sometimes, I think those are struggles that kind of translate everywhere, regardless of what situation or what system you're running in the NFL. So I could be wrong. Like, he may go to Las Vegas and just light it up if given an opportunity with John Gruden and the Raiders. I just don't anticipate that happening.
Yeah, the thing with Mariota, and I don't know what we're going to do in this city without the constant arguing over him, is, you know, even go back to like 2018, you know, he got injured. He had some really bad weeks, but then he'd have the second half at Dallas. He had the great performance against New England, great performance against Philly. So he always did enough to where you're like, wow, see, now that's the guy. But then there was too much of the other stuff. Too many just missed, you know, 10-yard outs that you can't miss, or, you know, a sack you can't take, you know, every once in a while a pick he can't throw. Although I think, if nothing else, later in his career, I think he didn't let it rip enough. But, you know, there was always enough good from him that you're like, wow, it's really enticing. But there just wasn't enough consistent performance. And I agree with you. I question his accuracy on a consistent basis to be able to do what Tannehill did here.
When we come back, our good friend Hal Gill, Skillsy, Preds Radio analyst, will join us. That's next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexrode from The Athletic, taking you through a beautiful Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. We welcome our good friend Hal Gill, Preds Radio analyst, brought to you each and every week at this time by Puckett's to the microphone. Skillsy, what's going on, my man?
Not much, man. Just, I'm cleaning out my garage now. That's pretty much where I'm at.
The sun's out today. I almost forgot what it looked like. Like, I'm so glad that the sun is actually out today and I get to step foot outdoors.
Isn't it nice? Like, I mean, if there's anything I needed, it's the sun. Nice to get outside.
How we were talking earlier in the week, The Athletic came out with a poll that had Roman Yossi winning the Norris Trophy, and he had more than 63% of the vote as compared to just 24% of the vote by John Carlson from the Washington Capitals. I wasn't necessarily surprised that Yossi won the poll. I was surprised at the margin at which he won it in the poll. When you look at the season that Roman Yossi had, if it pauses right now and the regular season is done, do you think Roman Yossi will win the Norris Trophy?
It's a tough one, because there's still a lot of work left to be done. But I think he has to. The numbers kind of waned off a little bit for Carlson. But if you look at all the analytics, I just think Roman has kind of taken the next step. And he's probably on both sides of the ice. He's probably the most dominant player in the game. And so I would give it to him. The way he pushes through the neutral zone, the way he defends and his offensive ability, I think the analytics go in his favor. And in the end, I think the eye test is what I go off of. And I've seen both of them play. And I just think Roman's the best defenseman in the game.
Hal, you mentioned analytics. How big of an analytics guy are you? Do you like? I mean, it seems to me like it's obviously exploded in the last few years in terms of people using that when talking about the NHL. I mean, do you dig in on that stuff? Do you like it? Do you think it's overdone at times? Where do you stand on analytics?
I will be the first one to tell you that I hated analytics because, to be honest with you, it ruined my career. I was not a good analytics numbers guy. You know, I had arguments with coaches when I was playing where they'd say your numbers are off, and I would tell them that they're ridiculous. What the hell do numbers mean? Now, I think it's a good tool for the right person to use, but I think there's so many factors that go into hockey and being such a fluid sport. That, you know, baseball, you can look at numbers and say, okay, this guy does this against this pitcher. There's a lot of things you can predict. With hockey, there's so many different elements with physicality, with just whether a guy has confidence in the way he's playing and what he's doing and what he plays well against. There's so many different variables that I think you have to take into account. That being said, you know, numbers don't lie, and you have to look at what you're doing and match it up with the numbers and say, okay, are we getting the right eye test? Is this matching up? And so I think that's where it becomes valuable is matching up the numbers with what you see.
Hal Gill on the line with us, Preds radio analyst. And Hal, there's been some news coming out lately that the NHL season potentially going into August, maybe in even September, if they're able to resume action this year. Is there a point for you, though, that maybe it's too late in the season to pick back up that's going to affect in the next season? We've heard Gary Bettman in the NHL come out and say, we don't want to put next season off schedule if we can avoid it. Is there a point that comes along here in this process where you're just like, yeah, it's just going to be too difficult to fit in an entire postseason in this amount of time?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, look at these guys. They haven't been on the ice. You know, they haven't been training. I know everyone's taking videos of what they're doing in their home gym and trying to get workouts in. That's the big thing, is trying to stay healthy and fit throughout all of this. But to be able to come back and play after you've been off for a month, make it 2 months, I think you're asking a lot of these players. Now, the off season is a huge time for the NHL, and I think people underrate how much is going on between the draft and free agency. Where do you line all that stuff up? That becomes another question for me. How much do you ruin the next season by trying to complete this season? So I don't know, because there's no date. You know, if you had one date, you said this is it, and can we start then? That would be great, but there is no date. So we don't know. So I feel bad for the NHL and the NHLPA having conversations about, okay, if it's this date, we'll do this. If it's this date, we'll do this. I mean, there's so many different ways that they could draw it up. I don't know when the last day is, but I can't see hockey going into August. I just it doesn't make sense to me. If you could finish up and find a way to cram in a playoffs before July 15th, I think that would be the best bet. But if you're going to extend the draft and free agency too far, I think it ends up ruining the next season. And I think players have to be really worried about that shortened off season is going to lead to a lot of injuries in the next season. And I think that's the biggest scare, is trying to cram in a playoff and then falling right into a regular season. And I don't think they want to start a late season next year. So a lot of moving parts and a lot of things to consider, but I would say, to answer your question, July 15th would be my cutoff date. If you can finish everything and get it in there, whether it's a shortened playoff series where you're playing 3 games, 5 games, that would be the way I would do it.
Yeah. Okay, 'cause I was just going to ask, like, you know, obviously, you know, we don't know the calendar. You could even talk about just pushing everything way back and cutting, you know, next season in half or whatever it is, and then you're talking about, know, you could be having playoff games like during football season, but I mean, you could still make the argument, you know, prime time during the week, people would, you know, you'd still, and then you just would have like a way reduced next season. It sounds like you don't like that idea.
Well, you know what the thing is, and I'd like to see happen, is you could do all of this without fans. You know, obviously, yeah. You know, you generate a lot of revenue from having fans in the stands, but that doesn't seem to be a viable option. So, you know, if you can get to a point where you can say, all right, referees, players, and TV and radio can all go out and conduct a game and have it be safe for the players and for the staff and everyone around. I mean, there's a lot of people that are going to be at a game, but if you take the fans out of the equation, I think that would be the best way to go about doing it. But I don't know. There's so many things that I'm questioning as we go through this, and I don't know how it works.
Hal Gill, Preds radio analyst, on the line with us. And Hal, we've been kind of looking back at games, playoff series moments throughout the last, you know, 20, 30 years of the NHL that we've enjoyed watching. And one of those that came to mind for me was the series that you were a part of in 2009 against the Red Wings, where you guys in Pittsburgh ultimately won the Stanley Cup. What was that series like to be a part of? And what do you remember most about that 7-game journey against the Red Wings?
It was kind of got smashed into 2 years. And as far as my memories go, I look back at it and, you know, I was with Pittsburgh when we played Detroit in 2008, and that was a 6-game series. And then there's 7-game series against them the next year in 2009. There's a lot of memories that kind of get smushed together, but, yeah, just that journey is, it's tough to explain, to be able to go that far for 2 years straight and for it all to come down to a game 7 was pretty awesome. For me, it was, you know, that's as good as it gets, to play in a game 7 and to be on in the final minute and be out there and be able to raise the cup was pretty awesome. But obviously pretty awesome, but, you know, it's kind of, when we're sitting back and reliving all these things because we don't have hockey, and I keep seeing replays of different playoff series that I was in and part of, just that journey, going through that with the guys was really the best part. And I've actually, they're showing in Pittsburgh, they're showing those games, and they want us to comment on some of the plays and here and there. And I've gotten back into a group chat with a 2009 Cup team, and it's pretty cool talking to those guys, and kind of the old jokes keep coming back up, and the old sayings that we had, and busting each other's chops. And that includes Rob Scuderi, of course, who's coaching with the Preds now. You know, it's kind of fun to go back in time a little bit. I'd love to have hockey here, but in the absence of it, it's nice to relive those.
Hal Gill has been our guest here on Morning Drive. Skillsy, thanks for coming on with us. As always, hope you enjoy this beautiful sunny day in our city.
All right. Thanks, guys. This is a good day to stay home when you have some sun. That makes it a bit easier, so enjoy it.
That's exactly right. Hal Gill, ladies and gentlemen, has been our guest. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the show next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Final segment of the day here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad from The Athletic. And Joe, we had Hal Gill on in the last segment. And it is interesting, as you're kind of going through this process of the NHL season, you're trying to determine, you know, when is the best time or how late can you go in a season to stretch this season out. And you've heard Gary Bettman and the NHL continually talk about how they don't want next season to be really affected or impacted by this one. But the more I look at it, the more I think if you're going to get in a playoffs this year, that's going to be hard to do. And we saw yesterday the NHL postpone the draft and the combine and the award show all scheduled for June. I took that to mean that they're leaving that open in June in case they're having to play games at that time. Didn't really read much more into it than that. But I do think if you're the NHL, at least from my vantage point, like, wouldn't it be better and more financially, I guess, beneficial for you to make sure you get your playoffs in, make sure you award a Stanley Cup champion, and then even if next season is impacted, even if you're playing, you know, 65 games next season, 66 games, 70 games, whatever the case would be, at least you've been able to finish this season somewhat and award a Stanley Cup champion. I know there are things that come along with that in terms of complications, like when is free agency going to be held? How long is the off season after the playoffs end? Like, all of these different things come into play. But I think in a perfect world, I mean, you would like to see, even if it does stretch into August, the NHL award a Stanley Cup champion.
Yeah. No, I mean, and we've talked about baseball today because it's supposed to be opening day and all the different possibilities and talk of like a 100-game season. You know, I mean, it's not ideal. You've got your regular season and you would rather go through that process and, you know, have your postseason come together the way it normally does. But, I mean, like, if you had to chop heavily into next year, to me, that's a better outcome, you know, to have a whatever game 2020-21 NHL season reduced than to not have a postseason and not crown a champion. I think you also that's going to come – some of that will come down to, like, what is the – like, what's the revenue, you know, sacrifice on this end? What's the revenue sacrifice on, you know, not having, like, the first, whatever, 30 games of next year? I mean, because you can always – I mean, you can have all these off-season things at a very weird time. I think we're probably going to see some of these sports have things that are at strange times. I mean, Scott Boras has his proposal of the baseball season and – you know, the World Series taking place around Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's talk with football. If football gets impacted, you know, would it just be maybe a winter sport next year? Do it all in the winter. People will watch the football whenever it might be. So if those things are up in the air, then to me, I'm still watching Stanley Cup playoff games if they're like in – September and October in football season, they're on a Tuesday night, you know, sure, you know, and everything gets pushed back. I know that there's a lot that goes into that, but I think that everything you can do to not have to totally wipe away your postseason, I would think that that would be worthwhile.
And just think about it from this perspective. Jared Stillman just texted me, our good friend from Jared and the GM in the afternoons, and brings up a really good point. I mean, the Olympics have been canceled and postponed and moved back. Those were going to take place on NBC. NBC would, I think, welcome NHL playoffs and Stanley Cup playoffs in July and August. They would love that to fill the time slot of what was originally going to be some Olympic programming during that time.
You know, I'm hesitant to give Jared credit, but actually that's a very good point, Jared. that's a lot of inventory that was going to be there. I mean, that's really that's the foundation of NBC's sports coverage anymore, you know, and now it's not going to be there. So, yeah. Well, and as Hal Gill said last segment, with any of these discussions, if you have to get to the point where it's like, okay, test all the players, test the officials, test all the other essentials who would be on site and play it without fans, I guarantee you there are millions who would be watching on television who would be appreciative, and there would still be, you know, the competition, most importantly, and there would still be the financial benefit of staging those games.
I think so, too. So I think that's going to be interesting to monitor as we move forward here from the NHL. Look, none of us know when it's going to happen, if it's going to happen, but certainly the opportunity is there for the NHL. If it's in July, if it's in August, I have no problem with that. We'll see if Gary Bettman and the NHL feels the same way. Joe, we were talking earlier in the show. Titans lose Tajay Sharp yesterday. He signs with the Minnesota Vikings, and Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network tweets out that he is expected to be the number two behind Adam Thielen, replacing Stephon Diggs in Minnesota. If that's the route that the Minnesota Vikings are going to go for their number two wide receiver, good luck. I just don't see that working. That's no disrespect to Tajay Sharp, but he's just not a number two NFL wide receiver. I mean, it's just as simple as that.
Yeah, This makes me I've got to start looking at some Vikings mock drafts because he's not going to be their number two receiver. I mean, if that's the case, that's a problem for them. And again, Tajay Sharpe has been a fine player here. He's a good four. Oh, no doubt about that. He's a good four. Okay, here we go. Let's see. Mel Kiper's got them taking Denzel Mims from Baylor at 22. Yeah, I imagine just about every mock draft out there has them taking, you know, a wideout. It's a great wideout draft, of course, and they would be able to get someone good there. I mean, that's what they've got to be thinking, is that they've got to go draft, you know, a stud receiver in the first round, and that's got to be, you know, hopefully quickly the two next to Thielen. And, you know, Tajay Sharpe, if he's your number three receiver, you know, you're okay there. But I suspect they're going to probably go try to find someone else on the market as well.
Do you think that losing Tajay Sharpe, we've talked about the need for the Titans maybe to address the speed receiver part of their game. Do you think that losing Tajay Sharpe opens that up? Maybe they're willing to go after that in the draft at some point. Now, obviously not going to be in the first round, at least you wouldn't think so. But at some point in the draft, do you think now it's much more likely the Titans go after the receiver position?
Yeah, and I honestly thought that would be, if there was someone they really liked and they could get him, that was going to be something they would look at anyway. But, yeah, I mean, you take Tajay Sharpe off the depth chart, and now I guess you probably increase the likelihood of the Titans looking at receiver somewhere in the draft. You know, I don't know if he's going to work out, and sometimes the little fast guy doesn't work out. I mean, John Ross was a guy, you know, the Titans, it was linked to the Titans the year they took Corey Davis. But K.J. Hamler from Penn State is a guy I look at and think, man, he could be Tyreek Hill-ish in this league. Everybody's looking for – everybody wants, you know, a player like that who can just – it doesn't matter what coverage you're throwing at him, he will just outrun everyone. K.J. Hamler from Penn State, for anybody who hasn't watched him or hasn't seen highlights, go, you know, look up some highlights. He is electric. He's dynamite. Again, he's small. And sometimes that doesn't work out. But that's certainly a guy who comes to mind when I think of that. And I'll be really interested to see exactly where he goes in this draft. He will not be a first-round pick, I don't think. That would be quite surprising. But he is an intriguing talent.
Joe, that's going to about do it for us today here on Morning Drive. I hope that you enjoy this beautiful weather taking place in our city today. You properly socially distance yourself, maybe even catch in a baseball movie tonight to rub it in the face of Munson that baseball does, in fact, have the best genre of sports movies.
And I won't be watching Space Jam, I'll tell you that much.
I can't believe how much of a hater you are there. It's unbelievable. Joe, thanks for joining me today, man. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, bud.
Absolutely. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 a.m. from 6 to 10 here on Morning Drive. That's going to do it for us today. Darren, Donick, and Chase coming up next. This is ESPN 102.5 The Game.